Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackedSidewalks.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. Joe McCann and Phil Bush here with you once again to talk about some Marquette basketball. Phil, how was your weekend?
Probably not as good as yours, but it was pretty solid. Had people over for the Super Bowl. Some teams played. And it was good. And we had 57 degrees in Milwaukee.
Yeah, and the right team won, which was great. I enjoyed all the tweets and interactions with many of you on Twitter as I was watching my Chiefs win the Super Bowl on Sunday. I appreciated the well wishes and congrats. It's kind of like an awkward thing now that I'm on that side of it. Like when you wish congrats to someone for their team winning, it's like, well, I didn't do anything except be a smartass on Twitter, but thanks. I appreciate it. But I was also thinking, if Marquette ever wins a national championship, I'm not sure the congratulations would be enough. I mean, I think I would want more. Not from Marquette fans, because we'd all be just, hugging each other and, ugly crying and all that stuff. But, I think if Marquette were to ever win a national championship, all my family and friends who are not Marquette fans, just the congrats on social media is not going to be enough.
No, I think they're going to have to send me, like, my first... first, like, kilo of cocaine or something. We're going off the rails by doing rails.
Yeah, just like, send me gift baskets, maybe a GoFundMe so I can buy a replica trophy or, something. Yes, that was somewhat euphoric to see a team I live and die with win a championship. That was enjoyable. But we are here to talk about Marquette basketball.
Well, and we should consider this a welfare check. Joe is alive, and he is good. Pretty well.
And all the checks, Ben, over on the Anonymous Eagle podcast, he survived as well. So this whole thing is going to continue. We didn't lose anybody, to my knowledge, by the Chiefs winning the Super Bowl. So we're going to power through and talk about a pretty good week, Phil. We've been talking over the past few weeks about, could Marquette get ranked? Could they maybe get there? And we said, the way college basketball has gone this year, top 25 teams are dropping like flies. So if you could string together a streak of three or four in a row, you're probably just going to sneak up there just because so many teams lose and everyone's looking for somebody to talk about. And right now, Marquette is maybe a team that people are maybe out when, like Gary Parrish said on his podcast this week on the Island College Basketball podcast, as teams keep dropping out, he was looking for resumes. And looked at Marquette's and said it was pretty good. And when you've won five out of six in the Big East, maybe you garner a little bit of attention.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the key is to not lose. I mean, one of the facets that we'll need to talk about with the Big East is, and I believe I'm getting all my Marquette related content mixed up, but I believe it was Paint Touches that was talking about, or maybe it was Alan Bykowski from Crack Sidewalks, but anyway, was saying, there are, six or seven or eight teams, and depending on if they're home or away, that are all giving you quad one opportunities. And in fact, Marquette has, if things hold, no quad three or quad four opportunities left on the schedule. And they have, as of, recording this podcast, six out of eight quad one opportunities. So six of the last eight games give Marquette to take that already pretty solid 4-5 in quad one and turn it into something like, let's say 8-9 or, even 9-8 or something, right? If they go 5-3 or go 3-3 in those, I'm doing math on the fly, 5-1 in those last six games that are quad one. But the point is that Marquette is all upside. If they just finish somewhat strong, they're picking seeding. This is not a bubble year necessarily. This is a year where they're pretty solid going into the last eight games with plenty of opportunity to grow.
Yeah, I think Marquette is pretty far above the cut line. It would take a pretty colossal fall for them to not make the tournament. Yeah, I hear you out there. Hey, well, they had a pretty colossal fall last year. But, yeah, Marquette has got itself in pretty great position. I think a lot of the latest bracketologies has them in the 6-ish range. I know Alan Bukowski has them in the 5 range, but like the last 5. So maybe a low 5, maybe somewhere 6 or 7. It's kind of where Marquette's sitting right now. So, again, it would the way so many other teams keep losing, it would take a pretty rough February for Marquette to not make the tournament. So, you know, even if they play 500, they're going to be comfortably in the tournament. And I think, looking at the KenPom projections, they are expected to do much better than 500, or, you know, at least, I guess a lot of those games are kind of 50-50 games, but they are favored in those 50-50 games. So, yeah, it could, they could go below 500 and still comfortably make the tournament in these last 8. Like, if they were to go 3-5, they'd still be in, I think. But
yeah, yeah. Alan's analysis is basically Marquette needs to win 2 out of the next 8 to be in the tournament. Granted, nobody wants that, but that's
yeah, how that's solid like their yeah, squeaking is. In, yeah, squeaking in, getting to Dayton, getting in. So yeah, I think that sounds about right. Like it would have to be really bad down the stretch for Marquette to not make the tournament. And it's been pretty good lately. Yeah, we've had our antacids out for some of these games. They've been real nail-biters, but Marquette has won them. This is something you talked about on the pod last week, Phil, is the maybe perception of the struggles in close games. And yeah, Marquette has a lot of them. But more often than not, Wojo has pulled out a lot of those close games. And the team did this week, and was particularly remarkable, the Xavier game, that they were able to win it without Marcus Howard, and then he goes out there and beats DePaul with a broken face, basically.
Yeah, well, and that Xavier game, I mean, they played without Marcus for, what, the last 12 minutes of regulation plus 2 overtimes? And
right.
And you could almost kind of see the offense and the team processing and, like, adapting as if it was an artificial intelligence as they went along, because in the last 12 minutes of regulation they scored 22 points, and then in the 2 overtimes they scored 23 points, right? So the offense just kept getting better and better and better without Marcus. Now, that's not to say we should play without Marcus ever again, because
please no.
Because quite frankly it is an honor and a privilege to see him play, but that's a gutty performance that, you know, at some point we have to acknowledge, yes, there's talent, yes, there's players, but that's also coaching, right? Like, some of that is a great performance from Wojo getting the most out of the team.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't quit on him, and they did find a way. And you were saying about the offense figuring it out. I mean, let's be honest. For most of the end of regulation and probably that first overtime, the quote-unquote offense was just Kobe McEwen trying to figure it out. Even if Wojo, like, just holding on to the ball, and he was shooting everything. And it worked out because Kobe was in clutch mode in that game, and he couldn't miss, it seemed like, for a while there. But even if Wojo did call some type of offense or had some plays drawn, Kobe was... he was taking those shots. But I think as they got into the second overtime, I think Sakar found his rhythm a little bit, and he was able to close it out against Xavier, and he had some of the bigger shots late in that Xavier game. So, yeah, maybe it may not have been the most beautiful thing we've watched, but it was – you have to admire it that they were able to just figure it out, like you said. And, yeah, as much as we want to – people tend to crap on Wojo from time to time because maybe it's not as pretty as they like, or they lose some games that you think they should have won, like the Providence game and maybe even the Butler game on the Friday before. But you got to give them credit when they win those games too, because you can't just embrace the negative and brush off the positives as flukes.
Right. Well, and you mentioned Kobe. I do have to call out one of my favorite all-time Marquette-related tweets was Dan Majewski, as the overtimes were going on, tweeted, "They should just make the entire Kobe out of the clutch time Kobe."
if they do that, he would be a first team All American.
Absolutely. But yeah, I mean, that was a crazy game, and The thing that's and this is gonna I'm gonna save a little bit of this, keep the powder dry a little bit for some conversation coming up in the DePaul game, but there was certainly some consternation and back and forth on Twitter about and the social media circles about coaching decisions in that Xavier game. But the players got it done. Yes, there's a shot or two that were kind of fortunate ones that went in or lucky breaks, but that happens to every team, right? Like it's not like Marquette is the only team that gets lucky breaks or fortunate shots or whatever. And, you know, it feels like we're on a run here where Marquette is single-handedly trying to validate the whole foul up three thing.
Right.
Because that happened at the end, like, it didn't happen at the end of the Xavier game when it should have. And Wojo even said in the post game, which I was a little surprised with because he usually doesn't, quote unquote, throw his players under the bus. But, you know, I guess when Ben Steele from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, you know, kind of was up next at the mic, Wojo responded with, yes, Ben, the intent was to foul up against a foul with three, and we just didn't execute. And it was Samir Torrance trying to foul, but, you know, being a freshman and probably afraid to do the wrong thing, he kind of baby fouled. And the Big right. East refs yep. are not going to give that to him. And so as a consequence, Providence hit a pretty lucky 32-footer to tie the game up and send it over into overtime in the first place. But yeah, I mean, to bounce back repeatedly and to come out ahead in that Xavier game without your best scoring option was, I think, impressive and really should build confidence in this team going forward.
Yeah, I mean, they... You know, the metrics always say to foul in that situation, but when a team guards and the guy misses, you never hear people say, well, that was a terrible decision, but they got away with it. And they're like, oh, well, they won.
Right.
Like, I think it was like maybe even KenPom tweeted that himself, said, yeah, into this game I'm watching here, they guarded up three, air ball, game over. No one will talk about this. Marshall, who's a 31% free throw shooter, firing up a 32-footer. I'll take that shot. If that's the way the game's going to end, I'll take my chances there. Didn't work out for Marquette in that situation, but that's probably what you, like, about as good right. as you could hope for, honestly, is a not great three-point shooter chucking it from 30-plus feet. But it didn't work out, and yes, Marquette fans were scarred heading into that game after the whole Wojo admitting he forgot the score. He did not realize the score of the Butler game, right?
Yeah. Yes, correct.
So they were very much scarred, and that carried into Saturday, which is what you were kind of alluding to a minute ago there, Phil.
Yeah, well, correct. And so this is where I put on my disgruntled old man yelling at the clouds pants. But going into the
let me get the soapbox out so you can put it down here. You can step up and go.
Imagine my disappointment when during the intros, go into the DePaul game, get there, have brunch, good time, everyone's enjoying themselves. Get to the game, everyone's kind of fired up. Hey, we've won 4 of 5. That was a crazy Xavier game. Yada yada yada. They do intros, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, people are actively booing Wojo during his introduction, like booing. And it's not just – it wasn't just the student section. It was also some of the sweater vest folks. But it was – I don't know if it was audible on TV or if they were showing anything at that point. But it was noticeable within the stadium. And, like, I just about lost my S, if you will, because, like – first of all, we're 4 of 5, and you know, in the last 5 games, you know, a top 30 team by all metrics, and had been on a winning streak. And yeah, we had a tough beat against Providence and Butler, but like, I was embarrassed. Like, if we had recruits at this game,
right.
What do you think they take away from fans booing a coach that's putting together his 6th straight winning season, going to get an NCAA bid, is in a, you know, second or third best conference in the country, and is, you know, all things being equal, doing pretty good. And our fans are booing. Like, that's just classless, to be honest.
Yeah, like, I'll stop a little short of, like, kind of where you were. Like, look, I have not been Wojo's most vocal supporter. I've basically said over and over again, I think he's kind of a middle-of-the-road coach. But, like, while I'm not here to, like, sing his praises and say he's doing an amazing job and deserves extensions and everything, where I am in agreement with you is it does nobody any good to boo your own head coach in the middle of a season where they have a lot in front of them that they could accomplish. Yes, they have had at that point they had won 4 out of 5. They would go on to win their 5th out of 6. They are favored in many more games than they are not the rest of the way. It is still possible that Wojo could get the highest seed he has gotten as Marquette's head coach. He could be a 5, or if he gets really hot, maybe, dare I say, a 4 seed in this tournament if Marquette really gets hot down the stretch and wins like 9 out of its last 10. That's all on the table. And I would say based on where expectations are from where we thought at the beginning of the season, he could very much overachieve this season for the first time, which I think that's one thing we said in the preseason, Phil, is Wojo has never really overachieved as a head coach.
Right.
Maybe you could say that about last year, but we kind of moved the bar when they were a game away from winning the Big East. But that being said, yeah, I think your point about recruits especially, because even if there wasn't a recruit there in an official capacity, there could be local high school players there who were just there to check out the game. There could be high school coaches there who have our AAU coaches there who have connections to all these kids who they're like, oh my God,
right,
what are they doing? And if that goes out over television, it looks bad. And so, yeah, even if, like, granted, I've said, yeah, maybe I am not Wojo's biggest supporter and saying that he is doing an amazing job and should get a big time extension, but I also don't think he's totally helpless. I don't think he's a terrible coach. He just falls short from time to time, and that's been frustrating. But there is still some season left. He is the coach. He's going to be the coach this year. He's going to be the coach next year. And he will very likely be the coach the year after that. So you might as well embrace him and support the guy.
Well, right. And here's the thing for me is, all right, if you don't like the product on the floor or you don't like Wojo or whatever, you know what? You know what's actually going to make a difference in a constructive way as opposed to a non-constructive way? Don't go to the games. Sell your tickets. Vote with your dollars, right? Like, booing the team, you know, booing Wojo and to a certain extent the team and how that carries forward to the recruits. Like, you know, and again, I'm not saying Wojo's perfect or great or like, if Wojo, you know, we had that podcast around where we said if Wojo disappeared and they replaced him with someone, would I be upset? Probably as a human being because he's missing, but like not in the like, okay, great, you know, Wojo's gone, now we got to find somebody else. Like, I'm not gonna shed tears if Wojo gets a brand new gets hired by Duke, you know, a year or two from now, right? Like, if that happens, that happens. But like, to boo him and like that some students on campus put fire Wojo in post-it notes on some windows, like, what is that? Like, this is, to me, this is just, and this is where I go into full rant mode. This is just entitled, like, petulant child thing. And, like, the fact that it wasn't just the students, I get it. Students can, you know, they're young and, you know, passionate or whatever. Fine. But this was, like, full-grown adults sitting in nice seats that were actively booing Wojo. And it's like, seriously, like, this is where I'm just like, get over yourselves. Because that's ridiculous.
Yeah, and you know, you look at the grand scheme of things and the way there have been so many just stunning upsets around college basketball this season, I would say right now Marquette really only has one truly regrettable loss as far as the opponent and the result, not necessarily the way the game went, and that's the Providence game.
Right.
That's the only one you would want back. Losing on the road at Wisconsin, it's your rival. That happens. Losing to Maryland, they're way better. Okay, that's fine. Creighton on the road is a tough game. Seton Hall on the road is a tough game. Butler on the road is a tough game. Yeah, there, especially that Butler game, you would have liked to see a few things go different down the stretch in that game. But as far as just the results and who you played and who you lost to, there was only one really regrettable game on Marquette's resume, and that's Providence. And it was a one-point loss in overtime.
Yeah, and oh, by the way, they beat Villanova. They hammered USC. right? They went on the road and they beat Kansas State. They're beating the teams they should beat for the most part, with Providence accepted, right? Like, I get being upset about a particular game or a sequence, or 100% get, okay, Wojo didn't know the score, but you know what? Fine, J.R. Smith forgot the score, for God's sakes, in an NBA game, right? Like, all right, fine, it was stupid. But to, like, carry that through, especially when, I mean, there is definitely a path. I'm not saying it's likely, but there's a path where Marquette finishes conference, you know, 13-5. It's not outside the realm of possibility, and 13-5 is probably good for second in the Big East. And you're booing this coach?
Yeah. Yeah, again, if you don't love the guy, I get it, because I'm probably in that boat with you. But trying to boo him and thinking, like, well, this is going to make the university make a move here, I'm telling you, man, you're wasting your time. You're wasting your breath. Just support the coach, support the team, because they have some opportunities ahead of them, this Sunday being one of the biggest ones. If they can beat Butler at home, they're probably going to be ranked next Monday. So, yeah, I did not realize the booing happened, because, to answer your question, no, it was not on television. I don't think the game was even live at that point. It was so long ago, I forget exactly what was on before the game, before the DePaul game. But it wasn't a national broadcast anyway. It was FS Wisconsin, and then picked up by different affiliates. But yeah, I definitely did not hear the booing on television. So yeah, disappointing to hear that happened, but maybe a little perspective. And again, look around college basketball. Look how many top 25 teams lose every single week, and a lot of them are much more regrettable than some of the losses Marquette has had.
Yeah.
Again, is the program national championship level? No, but if that's your expectation, maybe dial it back a little bit. we would all love to see Marquette win a national title. That's the dream for all of us. But the team kind of is what it is right now. It's in the upper half of the Big East. That's what they are, and that's where the expectations relatively should be. If they pick it up a notch, yeah, they could finish top three in the Big East. If they play average the rest of the way, they're probably going to be fifth, sixth, which is all right. And I really don't see a way that they could finish lower than sixth, honestly, realistically, unless, again, the bottom totally falls out. They're going to be sixth or higher. They're going to be in the tournament. So let's at least be supportive and let the coach and the team know we are behind them. And we honestly, yeah, I believe they can win a tournament game this year, especially if they can get in that 5-6 seed range where they should have a favorable matchup, and hopefully John Morant is not on the other side this time.
Yeah, well, and I mean, quite frankly, I'll go on record. I think they're capable of winning two games, right? And, I mean, they're winning. They've won. So this is part of that study I'm doing that I'm gonna publish an actual blog post about it at some point this week. But they've won 82% of their tight games. When as far as I've been able to tell, just doing some rudimentary research, that the typical average for that is like 60-70%, right? So like Wojo is winning close games. Now you can make the argument that some of the games shouldn't be close. Okay, I get it. That happens.
Yep.
But look at the balance of the schedule. We have 6 quad 1 and 2 quad 2 games remaining on the schedule. That's nuts if you think about it. Like, that is a lot. That is a lot of challenging games. And we had a lot of challenging games in conference so far, right? So, he can't win all the games, I don't think.
Right.
So
wish you can, but.
Right, right. We wish everyone could, but we're not San Diego State right now. but
we would be undefeated if we were in that conference, baby.
Yeah, for sure. That's true.
I don't know. I don't know that for sure, but yeah, go on.
It feels like it. But anyway, but the last thing I'll kind of say is, like, and this kind of goes for the social media stuff. Like, I get the in-game, the snark and the tweet. I mean, I'm as guilty as it anyone, right? Like saying things and being snarky about coaching decisions and what players did and all that. That's like just part of the fun of it, right? But, like, there are people on social media and clearly these fans booing that are just, like, kind of feels like they're in a dark place. And at some point, like, these games are supposed to be about entertainment. And, like, I kind of want just tell everyone, step back. Like, get some perspective. Enjoy the games a little bit. It does not seem like, people are really enjoying the games in a team that's 16-6 on the season. There should be a little bit more joy in the atmosphere than there feels like there is at times.
And we have possibly a guy who, you know, is going to go down as like an all-time great in program history.
Yes.
Putting up numbers that we may not see again for a long time, if ever. Because, you know, the next time we have a guy who can score like Marcus Howard can, he probably won't stay around 4 years to eclipse these records that Marcus Howard has been setting. Because usually when you get a guy who can score like that, he's an NBA talent. It is so rare to, one, have a score like that at Marquette, two, to have a score like that for 4 seasons. And that's what... So cherish the games we have left with Marcus Howard. And, yeah, so...
Well, and like, that's like time and the Xavier thing, right? Like, think about it. Marcus scored 26 points in the Xavier game, in which he sat out 22 minutes of game time. If he was healthy and they still come back in that game, there's a strong potential. There was a 50 point game there lurking in Marcus. So yeah, like I. You know, Joe, if you could go ahead and put the soapbox back in storage.
Yes.
We can move on for this, but, like, let's just, you know, enjoy a little bit of what we got, because there are lots of good opportunities coming.
Yeah, you know, I mentioned the Ion College Basketball podcast with Parrish and Norlander, and I enjoy when national folks talk about Marquette in general, just because, A, that means the program's doing well, but I also enjoy it because they are breaking down the team without the fan bias.
Right.
Like, they don't have the angst that we have of, I really want my team to be good, and let's break this down, and how can we be better? They are just breaking down the team with an unbiased eye, like Gary Parrish said. He just, you know, looked at Marquette's resume and looked at their wins, looked at their losses, and said, wow, they're actually pretty good. And he made a strong case for them to be ranked. He has them in his personal top 25 and one, but they are not in the AP top 25 as of yet. But another win's going to get that done. As, you know, we were saying earlier, so many top 25 teams lose. Next time, you know, the writers do their poll, they're going to say, well, I got to drop these three teams out this week. Who's next? Well, Marquette's got a nice resume, and they won this week, so move them up. So, really good opportunity coming up against Butler this week. It's really kind of a, you know, it's tough that Marcus has that, I guess it's a broken nose that he's dealing with, but it's fortunate that they have the whole week off this week, because I guess he is having a procedure done to fix the fracture or set it. I don't know exactly.
I'm assuming they're correcting his deviated septum.
Yes. Whatever they are doing, he is having some kind of procedure done. Probably has already had it done by the time you're listening to this podcast. And I assume he will be wearing that mask for the rest of the season. But it's a good time because, like, he can take a few days off, get that done, and hopefully that doesn't affect him too much going forward. And the thing is, Marquette has this week off. They play Sunday, and then they turn around and play Wednesday, and then they have basically another week off before Creighton. So there's a little bit of time to rest here if Marcus does need a little more time off, let that fracture or whatever he has heal a little bit more. But and as far as I know, he's going to be playing on Sunday against Butler.
I would assume that, since he played against DePaul, he would play.
Yeah,
play Butler.
Yeah, like I'm just saying. Like I'm assuming there's nothing about the procedure that would say, well, after this procedure, you can't do this for a few days. So I'm assuming he's going to play against Butler. But before we move on, let's just say, like, playing with, I guess it's a broken nose in a mask, you know, that has to affect your mindset a little bit. Like, going, even with the mask, you got to be out there thinking, well, I don't want to get hit in the face again before I have this surgery next week. You know, I may have chips in my nose, or, you know, that orbital bone or wherever he has that fracture. And I don't think he drove as much as maybe he would have liked to. I think he was purposely hesitant in that regard. And plus, we had mentioned in last week's pod that DePaul blocks a lot of shots, so it may have been for the best that Marcus was not driving that much in that game. But he still found a way to make a gigantic impact and hit the big shot late, which my dumb little clutch project last week, boy,
it's like he heard you.
He clapped back at that pretty quickly, so he hit the big shot late in that one. So just another remarkable effort from Marcus Howard. And again, I think we take him for granted. 31 points. We see 31 points from Marcus Howard and say, eh, it's not bad. I mean, that's pretty remarkable.
Right.
Like, the 30-point games in college are kind of rare, honestly. Not, like, super rare, but people don't get 30-point games every night for every team. Usually your leading score is in the 20s, low 20s, for most teams on most nights. And we see 25 or something from Howard. It's like, oh, tough night. That's just kind of the standard he set for himself, and that's why I think it's cool that people outside of this podcast, like Matt Norlander, is making a case for him for National Player of the Year, which he continues to, make that case. If you're the nation's leading scorer, you're going to have a shot at getting some National Player of the Year votes. I don't know if he's going to win it, but he's going to be in that discussion.
Right, absolutely. And I mean, it's games like DePaul, right, where he found a way to win. I mean, Marquette did not lead in that game until, what, a minute 15 left in the game? And, it's weird to have to point it out again, but DePaul always plays Marquette tough. So it's not somehow – and DePaul certainly, I would argue, is certainly one of the best 1-8 in conference teams I've seen in a long time, right?
DePaul is way better than their conference record suggests. Like, right. if they were in a weaker league, if they were in the American, they would be 500, maybe better in a league like that. They have played a lot of tough games and lost most of them. So, you are what your record says you are. So, they're 1-8. But – this DePaul is not the laughingstock DePaul of the last, 4 or 5 years, where anytime you play them, you expect to blow them out, and if you lose, it's a catastrophic blow to your tournament resume. Yeah, this DePaul, their record is bad. They do lose these games, so they are what they are, and that's why they're not going to make the tournament. But they have guys on that team who can make plays. Charlie Moore is a really good point guard. He played pretty well in that game. I thought Romeo Weems did a pretty good job. They had him on Howard for a lot of the game. He's just a freshman. He might be around for a while over there at DePaul. So, and Coleman Lance has been a nice player for them too this year. So yeah, DePaul's got some guys. They're just a step short of where they would like to be, and they're a step short every game, and they lose almost all those games. But yeah, that win is a better win than most people would think it is.
Yeah, well, and I feel confident saying I hope it's not Marquette when we go to play DePaul, but DePaul is going to pull off a win against one of the top four teams in the Big East. I feel confident that they're just going to catch a Nova or a Seton Hall or a Marquette or a Creighton on an off night, and they're going to get a win, right? Because they are talented and they're a quality.
Well, they already
opponent.
Got Butler.
Right. They already got Butler.
They already got Butler, yeah.
So
that's their one win.
Right, which is kind of weird. Cuz they've played St. John's twice, I think.
Yeah, they have. They've been swept by St. John's. They've been swept by Seton Hall, which is no shock, but their one win is Butler.
Yeah. So, but I mean, that was a tough game, and if we want to talk about adjustments, what do you make of Marquette going to the zone, in the last 3 or 4 minutes in the game to kind of take DePaul out of what felt like their offense essentially scoring at will?
It may have been a little bit to protect some of the guys in foul trouble. There were a lot of fouls called in that game. Jace Johnson fouled out.
Everyone in DePaul's starters had four fouls.
There was a time that DePaul had every guy on the floor had four fouls. But yeah, I mean, by the end of the game, Kobe and Sakar each had four. Theo actually stayed out of foul trouble in that game. He only had two, but maybe that was part of it. But that is kind of Wojo's go-to wrinkle, though. If when he needs a stop and whatever they're doing has not been working, like Marquette does struggle on pick and roll defense quite regularly, and maybe they were afraid that DePaul was going to go to that and get the buckets that they needed. So, yeah, I do kind of like that Wojo is not afraid to throw that out, even though I think he generally does not like playing zone defense, and he would rather just play an aggressive man-to-man. But no, I mean, it's an adjustment, and it's another place where you have to give Wojo some credit, and again, you can't just brush off the successes as flukes and then just circle all the flaws and everything that goes wrong as evidence that he can't coach. You have to acknowledge that, hey, well, what he did there did kind of work.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was interesting because it wasn't a Syracuse type 2-3, right? Like it was a little bit loose. So DePaul had opportunities.
Like Marquette is not. I mean, it's just a wrinkle. They're not good at it. They are not going to go to the 2-3 full time and just lock teams down. It's more of a look where that's going to make the offense go, wait, holy crap, that guy's not where I think he's supposed to be. And then they hesitate and reset, and then all of a sudden, time's running down on the shot clock, and maybe you can force a bad shot or whatever. Marquette is not great at the zone, so that's why you're not going to see it for long stretches. It's just to force another look and force a mistake, and then once the defense figures it out, you're probably going back to your man-to-man.
Well, right, because that's one of the things we've seen in the past where you see zone like that or even in the early seasons of Wojo, there were a couple of times he went to some exotic 1-3-1 looks and stuff, and people are like, well, why don't they play that all the time? Well, it's not, we even saw it against Maryland, right, when they went to 2-3. It worked for a couple of minutes, and then Maryland got comfortable with it and was able to score against it. One, because the zone's not great. Marquette does not have nearly enough length across the board, especially when Marcus is playing, to really make the 2-3 effective. And again, it is a wrinkle. It's a change of pace. It's throwing something different. It's kind of like the three-quarter press that they put on occasionally. Its intent is to make the other players think a little bit more than they need to, slow them down and stuff like that. And so I really just bring it up as kind of a point, like you said, you can't just take the bad stuff. You got to see, you got to look at the good stuff as well. And that's a good example of Wojo helping to coach to an important victory for Marquette.
Yeah, so and hopefully it continues on Sunday against Butler, which of course is National Marquette Day. By the way, I want to get this in before throwing it in at the end. On National Marquette Day, if you are not in Milwaukee, try to get to a local watch party. I go to them in Dallas here every year. It's kind of fun. If you've never been to one, if you're a person who lives elsewhere in the country, you may be surprised that there is one where you live. Even if you live someplace far away like Dallas, Texas, or San Diego, or Seattle, just look it up. Marquette has a website where you can look up where your local watch party is. They're fun. You never know who you might meet there. Maybe someone from your class, someone of your age group, may have a lot more to talk about than you think, and just make some new friends, and it's just a way to meet some new people in the Marquette community. Those watch parties are pretty fun. Now, of course, you're in Milwaukee. If you can be at the game, it's going to be a great place to be on Sunday. I know when it was first announced that National Marquette Day was on a Sunday at 11 a.m. game, it was not met with a whole lot of excitement, because I know it's tough for some people to get to Milwaukee, or maybe more so tougher to get home on Sunday night or whatever. So, and Sunday morning at 11 a.m. is kind of disrupting some people in their mass schedules and whatnot. So maybe it's not the best time, but plan accordingly. Go to church early. Go to church Saturday night if that's what you got to do. But it should be a great day, and it is kind of a fun thing. It's kind of a bit of a unique thing because we're not a football school, so this is more or less our homecoming as far as a homecoming game. So it is kind of a fun day, and it looks like they're going to have shirts at the arena and try and stripe it out again, which I think looks cool on television. Looks like it's just going to be just the blue and gold. I know they've done the three colors in a few times in the past, so they're trying something different this time. So I know you're going to be there, correct, Phil?
That is correct. Actually, all four of us are. It's going to be a Bush family outing.
Well, excellent. No red for Owen and no red for Amelia. Both
God no. They would be disowned and left outside the stadium for someone else to take should that happen.
Good for them. But I'm excited for the rematch with Butler because Marquette played them much closer than I thought they would have the first time around, and it's well documented kind of what happened in the second half of that Butler game. With the timeout, but also Marcus's struggles when he may have taken a bump to the head and struggled a lot in the second half of that game. Was what, 4 of 18 from three, but hopefully that doesn't happen again. And he, I assume, will be masked up. But other than knowing the score and Marcus shooting better, what other adjustments would you want to see against Butler this time around, Phil?
Well, I really want to see Marquette try something different at the end of the game if it's close, to force Kamir Baldwin from taking, you know, 16-foot mid-range jumpers and making them ad nauseum. I don't know, run a double team at him, you know,
defend the pick and roll better. Just figure out something on that pick and roll.
Well, he just absolutely
tore them up.
Right. But this is where I will point out that having Greg Elliott back may make a difference, right? Elliott, with his length, he's quick enough to stay with Baldwin, and with his length, he may give him fits. So I would expect at the end of the game type situations that Elliott would get the defensive assignment to guard Baldwin, and you're going to move Sakar on to some of the other players, or, you know, on a McDermott or something like that. You know, you're not going to put Sakar or Kobe on Baldwin because they're, you know, similar sizes, similar lengths. So I think that would be interesting. And had Elliott been available, I'm curious to see how that would have turned out in the original game.
Yeah, we kind of glossed over that. It was nice to see Greg back out there. He was able to test the ankle. He didn't play a ton of minutes against DePaul, but, you know, he has been missed. We've mentioned he only played 7 minutes in that game, but he mentioned in a couple podcasts ago, he's just a guy who, yeah, will he ever be a star? I don't know about that, but he could do so many things well for you. He can defend. He shot the ball well this season. His effort is always there. He can get you a few points here and there. He's a pretty good attack in the basket, and yeah, his three-point shot has been improved this season, so good to see him back out there, maybe more than 7 minutes this time around, but he's just a nice guy just to have as that option if you need to sit Marcus Howard or Kobe McEwen down for a few minutes, either because they're tired or you just need to talk to him for a minute if they're struggling, and just say, hey, look, man, you've had a rough few possessions there, let's take a breath, realize what's going on here, let's get you back out there, and then you could put Elliott out there while you're talking to him, and he's not going to embarrass himself. You know he's going to do his job, and he's going to and may even rally the team a little bit, whether he's making a play on the defensive end or hitting a few outside shots. So, yeah, I think that's a good point. Maybe Elliott could be a small difference in this game because it was so tight the first time, and then you've got also the home court that could swing it back the other way, which is why on KenPom, Marquette is actually a slight favorite against Butler for Sunday.
Right. Now, and I know the I'm trying to look it up here real quick because it popped into my head and I forgot. Butler's point guard was out last time Marquette played them. Is he going to be back?
Is that Thompson?
Yeah, Aaron Thompson. Yep.
Okay. I don't know. Did he play in the last game? Let's see. Did he play in the Providence game? Sorry.
Yep.
You caught me with I was not prepared for questions. I was not prepared for that much research.
No, he has not played.
He didn't play the last
three games. So, I guess we don't know, but if he's out again, Greg Elliott back, the team's gotten used to playing without Ed Morrow. Because remember, that original Butler game was, the second game without Ed Morrow. Now they've kind of adjusted, and seemingly Jason and Theo are going, you be the guy this week, all right, I'll be the guy that week, you know, and bouncing it back and forth. If we ever get Jason and Theo both being really productive, hoo boy, look out. I think it's tough to call, especially given the way the last Butler game ended. But I got to think Marquette's got a lot going for it in this game that point towards being successful.
You would hope so, but there's just so much chaos in college basketball, you never know. Not that this would necessarily be a chaotic loss, but this is really a tough stretch of the schedule, even though it is spaced out pretty well because it's one game is Sunday, then you got the turnaround for the 12th, and then the next game after that isn't until the 18th. But you got Butler at home. You go to Villanova, which is the only game KenPom is projecting Marquette to lose at the moment. And then you get Creighton, a rematch with Creighton, who blew Marquette out the first time at their place. So that's a tough three-game stretch, Butler, Nova, Creighton, three in a row. Thankfully, again, it is spread out a little bit, so maybe a little more prep time for a few of those games. But yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. I'm cautiously optimistic that Marquette gets one more win before maybe they get humbled when they head to Philly and face Villanova next week. But because, you know, again, the way things are going, I don't see anybody like in the Big East stretching together like 5-6 game winning streaks. Although Seton Hall got off to a hot start, it's just so tough to stay that hot for that long in the Big East. But yeah, if Marquette can get this win, and then you're playing with house money against Villanova on Wednesday, and then you can hopefully get back to your winning ways after that when you come back home for Creighton's. But yeah, I mean, the way Marquette played Butler the first time around, for the most part, it was going really well. Then all of a sudden, Marcus's shot wasn't falling, and Marquette just stopped defending Kamar Baldwin, and he just tore him up. So that, with the home court advantage, with Elliott back, I am liking the chance of a win on National Marquette Day.
Well, yeah, and keep in mind, like you pointed out, Marcus's shot wasn't falling, and there was a series of unfortunate events in that game. But the strategy through, you know, 80% of that game was sound, and I don't know that that changes. I don't know that that strategy is going to be different. Hopefully they can execute it as well, if not better, than they did the previous time and do it for the full 40 minutes. So I think it's definitely a gettable game. I think the week rest really comes at a great time to turn around and be successful about Butler. Because one of the things, and maybe it's a minor point to make, Marquette's the only team in the Big East to play 10 games. So they've been playing games at a pretty brisk pace here.
Explains the gap coming up here to kind of even it out.
Correct. And so not only is Marcus kind of recovering from his injuries, everybody else has got tweaks, right? And one of the players I'm really excited about, and maybe we should talk about him more, but Jace Johnson has really come on of late, especially rebounding. And I think it's as he's been healing, as his knee's been feeling better, I think he's getting more assertive. He's feeling more comfortable in the offense. And I think, you know, having a nearly full strength Jace Johnson, and obviously Theo's been dealing with his hand wrist injury, so he's not going to be at full strength. But, you know, I don't think he's getting worse. He's about where he's always going to be, barring another injury. I think those two guys are coming along nicely. They're dependable. I think we've kind of finalized that, yeah, maybe we're really not going to run the offense through Theo much. Jace is got some more opportunity there, but they kind of know what they are. And I think they are very, very matchup friendly against what Butler wants to do, right? Butler isn't a five out type of team. They're much more of a Marquette type team. So I think we match up favorably. So I'm really looking forward to National Marquette Day. I think it's going to be a fun game. And if nobody boos, I would really love it.
Yes. Please don't make Phil angry and have him.
You wouldn't like to see me angry.
Chew you out again. By the way, speaking of Jace Johnson, and the one thing that is easy to see is just his aggression on the boards. He is just a very aggressive rebounder. Like, he is not afraid of getting elbowed or, you know, knocked around. He goes after rebounds with a lot of determination, and it shows in his numbers. He's not eligible to be ranked among offensive rebounding, like any statistical number on KenPom, because he hasn't played enough minutes. But if he were, and I guess he's playing more and more now, he's probably going to get enough minutes at some point to be ranked. His offensive rebounding percentage would rank him fifth in the country if he were eligible.
That's good, right?
Yeah, like, again, he's at 17.7%, but he hasn't played enough minutes to be eligible. But yeah, that would put him, if he keeps that up and plays enough minutes, that would be fifth in the country. So he is an elite offensive rebounder, is what I'm telling you. And his defensive rebounding percentage would be in the top 100, so that's nothing to sneeze at either. So just his presence and aggression, and he's got to be just so frustrating for opposing big men, just the way he goes after the ball and how much space he takes up, and he's got those sharp elbows. So he just can't be any fun to play against. So yes, we probably don't talk about him enough, but his effort is always there. He may not score. Sometimes he may not even take a shot, but that doesn't mean he's not having a huge impact. Just his presence and how active he is on the glass makes a big difference.
Yeah, for the record, even on the offensive night, he's not putting up a lot of flashy points, but his offensive rating, with the exception of, I kind of forgot he played against Butler for all of 6 minutes and didn't do anything other than two rebounds, two turnovers, and a couple of fouls. But other than that, in conference play, he has by and large been offensively sound. He's been getting offensive ratings above 100 for pretty much every game he's played meaningful minutes in. So, yeah, again, if you get the really good Jace Johnson, especially the offensive rebounding, he's a piece, right? Like he can get you a couple of buckets like he did against DePaul, right? He got what, two or three buckets in a row that kept Marquette in the game midway through the second half that were really important, and hopefully he can do that against Butler as well.
More and more minutes for him has been a good thing. You know, not that I necessarily wanted to see Ed Morrow leave the team, but if it means more minutes for Jace, I think that's good for the team overall.
Yep, I agree.
Yep, for sure. You know, speaking of guys leaving the program, leaving programs in general, I really wasn't going to bring up the tough week Wisconsin had. They actually turned it around and finished. You know, give them credit, they got a nice win against Michigan State over the weekend. But they made a lot of headlines with the Brad Davis suspension and Kobe King leaving. And I wasn't going to bring it up just because, you know, we're a Marquette basketball podcast. We don't need to talk about Wisconsin here. But the fact that a reporter for Rivals did say an early indication is Kobe may have an interest in transferring to Marquette. So if you're not aware, Kobe King, the guard from Wisconsin, he is a redshirt sophomore because he sat out his first season, abruptly left the team, which, by the way, Andy Katz really kind of let him have it. Did you see that video?
Yes, I did.
Big Ten Network?
I debated which I was more disappointed, Andy Katz as an adult or Marquette fans booing Wojo.
Yeah. You know, look, here's the thing. Like, the thing about that is Andy just sounded like a fan to me. He said,
right.
For those who don't know, Andy is a Wisconsin alum. And he said, from sources, you know, respected sources within the Wisconsin program.
Greg Gard.
Just say you got it from Gard. I mean, Jesus. But, he basically called Kobe a quitter. Now, the thing is, when student-athletes do things like this when they leave programs and they transfer, the safe take to always have is the kid is always right, right? Like, mm-hmm. that's the safe take to have. And it's a fair take to have because generally, the kid is doing what is best for himself or herself. They're leaving a program where they're not happy for whatever reason. So that is the safest take to always have. The kid's doing what's best for them. Let them do what they want to do. Now, I will say, like, while I would not have said it in the tone or the way in which Kat said it, like, he's not wrong. I mean, there's nothing that King benefits, like, unless it's some, like, off-the-court situation that is very toxic and is, like, affecting him mentally and he's just struggling with it and he has to get out of there. That's something different. But he doesn't benefit in any way as far as eligibility by leaving the team in late January because he can't. Like, I don't think he's going to be – he'll probably apply for a waiver, but I don't think it'll be – I think it would be denied that he could not play, like, second semester next year.
Right.
I think he's going to have to sit out the rest of this year. I don't know if he's still, like, enrolled at Wisconsin. Because if he is, I suppose if he's still enrolled there, he could try to graduate early. I don't know if he has enough classes. But then he could be eligible right away next year and have 2 years left wherever he ends up. But – I'm guessing the way it's going to go is, I don't know if he withdrew from the school or not, he's have to sit out the rest of this year, all of next year, and then he would have 2 years left after that. Now, all that being said, Phil, scale of 1 to 10, how interested would you be in Kobe King as a Marquette Golden Eagle?
If he wants to come here and it makes sense from a roster makeup, that's fine. I mean, I've seen him play. I'm not going to say he's anything special, and this is not me, you know, picking on a Badger, right? Like, I think he's a solid player. Since he would have to sit out next year, we know we have roster room over the next couple of years, and we've talked about a traditional transfer, you know, trying to get one more freshman, a traditional transfer, and maybe a grad transfer yet in this recruiting class. He would fit the bill. And again, if he's kind of going, it would be interesting given the tone of his whole, especially what down with Zach Showalter and Tyler Hero on Twitter, you know, where they
God, how great was that interaction?
Oh my God! Like Wojo should just have that as a printout and walk into players in Wisconsin, especially walk in the state of Wisconsin, walk into their houses and say, I'll let you read that. Now let me talk about all the players we put in the NBA from Marquette.
I would have that tweet framed like somewhere like in his office where it's visible when a recruit's there.
Yeah.
Just a framed tweet from Tyler Hero. Hey, a lot of people would like to go to Wisconsin, but not in that system. I think you would agree. Whew. That's the thing that all Wisconsin fans know deep down but don't want to admit is that nobody wants to play in that system. That was like one thing that I'd heard somebody else say, but like in about Kobe King leaving, like not liking the system. Like, what system did he think he was getting into?
That's true.
I mean, granted, I guess he committed at a really tough time because he verbally committed to Bo Ryan and ended up signing with Greg Gard. So maybe it's changed. I don't watch enough the Wisconsin basketball to know the nuances of how much the system has changed from Ryan to Gard, other than it's just not as successful and there are not NBA players in it right now. But it hasn't changed that much, has it?
It's different. It's gone to more Bo Ryan had adapted a little bit and it was less swing. And Guard's gone back a little bit more to the swing offense, it seems, but again, that's as a casual observer. I don't know, but if
your wife makes you watch, doesn't she?
Yeah. Listen, happy wife, happy life. I think there's enough there that if Kobe's interested and we've got the room, I don't see any reason to say no if there's mutual interest, right? I definitely would take the emotion out of it, right? I wouldn't make it a stick it to the Badgers thing, but.
Oh, I'm 100% with you there. There's with as many scholarships as Marquette has to burn right now, why wouldn't you look at a guard who can score, who is a local kid who, and again, if he has to sit out as long as I think he's going to have to sit out, he actually might fit in perfectly because he would take over after Kobe McEwen graduates.
Right.
They would probably have quite a need, and I'm assuming he would have 2 years of eligibility left because he had to redshirt his first year. He played 2 years. He's going to have to sit out all of next year. And then I guess that would mean he would have to be on scholarship for 6 seasons. Would he need – I don't know if he would need a waiver for that or not. But
I think you can play 5 of 6 seasons. So since he would only play 4 of 6, I think he's good.
Yeah. All right. So maybe – I'm assuming he'll have 2 years left wherever he ends up. But, yeah, it is certainly worth a phone call, a text message, you know, call the he was probably recruited by Wojo and staff once upon a time, so there's probably still at least some kind of relationship there. It's still probably, you know, in the contacts in the old phone. Just reach, call dad, call the high school coach, say, hey, look, do we have a shot here? Is there interest here? Is there a fit? You didn't like that system. What do you think of our system? You want to come on for a visit? We're playing Butler on Sunday. Why don't you come on down?
Right.
So it is certainly worth exploring. Good for both positive and negative reasons. Yeah, like you want to like check out all your options. Yeah, he's got some talent. The leaving a team in January, I would want to ask him about that and just say, look, why did you know, was this the right thing for you? Do you feel like you're a quitter? Because some, you know, people are calling him that, and granted, that's the hot take to have there. But I would still ask him about that and make sure that if he's in, he's all in. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, if you're going to bring him into your program, that he wants to be a part of the program, and that if he doesn't get the ball as much in his first season, that he's going to bail out on you again, that's something you want to look at for sure. But if he was just truly miserable there and just thinks it was a toxic situation, it has to get out, and he's all in on your program, and you think he can help you win games, heck yeah, you explore it. Heck yeah, you look at it. But again, they were just that was just one guy throwing out a couple names. I think the rivals were, I forget his name, but he said Virginia and Marquette are two places he's going to look at, but it's very early. And again, I don't know if he's still enrolled at Wisconsin or if he has just dropped out of the school altogether and is looking to like enroll late somewhere and like be on a college campus. Obviously, he can't play anywhere right now, but I don't know what his situation is like academically as far as enrolling or taking classes or where he would be anytime soon. But I'm under the impression that he will not be taking classes anywhere this spring, or maybe he's just finishing up classes at Wisconsin to try to, I don't know, graduate early or whatever. But I don't know where he would be the rest of this season, but he's probably going to be taking, you know, taking some visits, taking some phone calls, and try to figure out where he's going to be. And it's certainly worth Marquette's time to bring him in, because it would be valuable to have a veteran guard who is ready to step in, presumably, after next season, after you're losing Kobe McEwen and Greg Elliott.
Yeah, the only hesitation is just simply in...
Greg Elliott still has 3 years. He has 2 years left, yep, after this, so... My bad.
No, I was just going to say, my only hesitation is he's not a very good three-point shooter. Like, in this day and age, a relatively abysmal one, right? He was shooting 25% this season from three, and doesn't even shoot a lot of them. So, again, if there's a good fit there, or you think, hey, a year in our system, we can get him coached up to be able to shoot threes, again, if there's mutual interest, go for it. Otherwise, now, the one thing that's interesting, looking at KenPom, he has played 3 years. So,
oh, did he,
yeah,
really?
So he's a junior by class, theoretically, though he's listed as a freshman twice. So I don't know. He's listed as a freshman in 2018, a freshman in 2019, and then a sophomore in 2020. So I don't know. Maybe somebody that actually watches that team on a regular basis can enlighten us. But I'd guess, having that, maybe we got to change our answer, and he's going to be around for one season.
Yeah, the thing is, I want to say the article did list him as a redshirt sophomore. Maybe he got some kind of waiver and
could be. Maybe he got injured that first season, and
he definitely did get injured. I do know he got injured as a freshman. That's why I was under the impression that he sat out his entire freshman season. But he may have played a minimum number of minutes.
This is saying he played 10 games.
Okay. But yeah, it might be more about minutes, because I want to say, like, didn't they had a Marquette had a situation with like Chris Otule,
yes,
that he only played like a few minutes, legitimately got injured, or was able to take a medical redshirt for that year.
Yes, this is now coming back to me. The way it works is you have to only play a certain percentage of the games in your schedule. So I think, and this is where he got lucky. 2018 was one of the seasons that they went to the Final Four, the Elite Eight. So he played 10 games, which if it had just been the regular season, it would have been too many games. But because they played the extra games in the postseason, it counted for he got in under the threshold of maximum number of games he could play and still get that red shirt. So I don't think that freshman year counted.
There you go.
I think that was
so,
the red shirt. Okay. So
Presumably 2 years left for Kobe King, wherever he ends up. So, again, if you're a recruiting guru, you can't get enough of that stuff, maybe just something to keep an eye on if Kobe King and Marquette become more attached over the next few weeks or whatnot over the rest of the season. But I was thinking, like, as far as you can recall, has anyone ever transferred from Marquette to Wisconsin or from Wisconsin to Marquette? I know it damn near happened last spring.
Yeah.
But
if the Wisconsin fans counted, it absolutely happened last season. But no, I don't know. We'd have to go in the Wayback Machine, but I'm not aware of any transfers from one school to the other or vice versa.
Yeah, I mean, we've had players decommit from one to the other and, you know, change their commitments, but as far as players who have played for both Marquette and Wisconsin, again, I'm sure someone has done it at some point, but I do not know of any off the top of my head. So
that could be a fun little Twitter
a little trivia time. I'm sure somebody out there will know it like right away, and I'm sure if I just did a Google search here right now. I could figure it out, but I just don't want to do
it. Well, and we've been talking for a fair bit.
We actually have, so we probably need to wrap this thing up. So, in conclusion, Phil, you are on record with a only one game this week, and that's the Butler game. Are you on the record with a prediction of a W?
I am on the record with a prediction of a W. I think we're going to exercise the demons, and we're going to go with a 78-66 score, and Wojo fouls up three again.
Wait, how's that going to happen if it's 78-66?
I meant to say 76. I'm sorry, 78-76.
Okay. Maybe I misheard you. I thought you said 78-66. I'm like, well, that's a blowout.
No,
but,
no.
Yeah, that's
He decided to foul up 12.
A really advanced strategy.
Nobody else see it coming.
Just fouling all the time. You know, I'm kind of in the mood. I'm predicting more heartburn, but a victory. So I'm going to say 80-78.
Ooh, I like
good guys.
It. I like it.
Yeah. So yeah, more heartburn, more fouling up three, more remembering the score, all that stuff. As always, folks, we appreciate your feedback. It's been kind of a longer podcast than I expected today, but give us your feedback on it. We are on Twitter at I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF 23. At Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. You can go to cracksidewalks.com, post the podcast there, leave your comments on cracksidewalks.com. Don't forget to go to Apple Podcast, rate, review, and subscribe. And we also have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page, if that's your thing. We post the podcast there as well. Phil, have a good week. Anything else?
No, let's keep track of time and score and have a good rest this week.
Yes, and let's enjoy living in a world in which the Kansas City Chiefs are Super Bowl champions. Enjoy, everyone. Until next time, seashells and balloons.